Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey, what you say, boys and girls? This is Bobby Bliss from Overkill. That's right. And guess what? We just got added to the Milwaukee Metal Fest. We'll be there Friday, May 17th. So stay the whole weekend. Let's get our heads ready to bang. We're heading to the epicenter, Milwaukee. Let's get it on. My name is Bobby Blitz, and I approve this fucking message.
What is going on, everybody? Thanks for your patience in getting this part two of this episode out. We appreciate all the views, all the likes, all the comments, constructive or not constructive. As long as you're liking, subscribing, hitting the bell, you're cool with me. All right. And the episode, I thought the first episode was great. Tim's a big boy. So some of you who are hurt or irritated by my questioning in the first episode, you don't got to worry about this episode, because this is much, much more laid back, and I think you'll enjoy it. Ken Susie of Unearth fame, now currently playing with Tim and As I Lay Dying, is joining this episode. So it's a fun one, and I appreciate Tim and Ken coming back on, because we didn't really get to talk about that much As I Lay Dying stuff, and we didn't really give Tim a chance to promote his Austrian Death Machine record. So I wanted to make sure I did that, because he was, like I said in the intro of the first episode, he was totally cool about not editing, and there was no, you know, off questions that were off limits. It was like, say whatever you want, do whatever you want, and he was game. So I appreciate that. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Century Media Records, one of our great sponsors of the Milwaukee Metal Fest, and they have so many good bands on this year's fest, between Bewitcher and Skeletal Remains and Night Demon, who are going to help us kick off the big Friday night show. Last year, you know, we had Napalm Death. We had a ton of Century Media bands. We just love this label, and they're such a great supporter of the podcast and such a great supporter of Milwaukee Metal Fest. Head on over to centurymedia.store after the podcast today and get yourself some records, some merch, some vinyl, some CDs. Get it all over at centurymedia.store, and make sure you head on over to therave.com/metalfest to get your Milwaukee Metal Fest tickets, because we are just about a month away from the show, and it's going to be a great time. Also want to thank Dunable Guitars. Dunable Guitars. Mike, how do you say it? Dunable Guitars. Dunable Guitars. I think I was mispronouncing that. My apologies. And thank you to Dunable Guitars, because they are another one of our great presenters of the 2024 edition of the Milwaukee Metal Fest. And right now, you can get your favorite new riff stick over at dunableguitars.com. Use the code MMF24 until May 20th, and you're going to get 10% off an awesome axe, okay? Check out the Asteroid, check out the Narwhal. You'll see, if you're watching on YouTube, like, subscribe, hit the bell. Go give their channel a like and a sub as well. Tell them Josta sent you. They've been posting some killer videos on their channel. Dunable guitars.com. Use the code MMF24 until May 20th. Last but certainly not least, IndieMerchStore.com, the mighty IndieMerchStore.com. They are presenting the main stage, the Eagles Ballroom stage, that you will see Blind Guardian, Hatebreed, Mr. Bungle, Slaughter to Prevail, In Flames, Avatar, and many other bands. That is IndieMerchStore.com, promo code JOSTA10. And they're going to have a big booth set up like they did last year. They're going to have a ton of merch for sale all 3 days. They might even be set up at the pre-party. We'll have to find out. IndieMerchStore.com, use the promo code JOSTA10. And thank you, everybody, who's pre-ordered the new And Josta for All album. I will get them up on IndieMerchStore.com as well. But right now, we're doing the exclusive pre-orders through MartyrStore.net. And you can get your meet and greets from Milwaukee Metal Fest there, and you can get vinyl and all sorts of other goodies at martyrstore.net. Right now, the coupon code is 15JJ. That's 15JJ, but it's ending this weekend. And come check us out May 16th, Thursday, May 16th at the Rave in Milwaukee for the pre-party. It's Shasta, yours truly, and friends. I got Bobby Hamble from Biohazard, Bobby Blitz from Overkill, Hoya from Madball is going to come. Danny Diablo is going to be DJing. He's going to be on the podcast very soon. It's going to be a great time. Go to therave.com/metalfest and check us out. We're doing two CD release shows, one at Mickey's in Pennsylvania and one Mickey's Black Box May 31st and Starland Ballroom June 1st. Overkill and Josta. These are the two big and Josta for All CD release shows. So make sure you come and check it out. Get your tickets. And we will be putting up meet and greets at martyrstore.net for both of those shows. Okay. All right. We got Tim Lambesis and Ken Suzy on the show. Enjoy it, Buster.
My friend, the lead singer of Hatebreed, the infamous and notorious Jamie Josta, is in the building. That's what's up.
Jamie Josta from the metal band Hatebreed. That guy's famous.
Coffee, death metal, and push-ups.
That's Jamie Josta. Remember Jamie Josta? You know him. He's a podcaster, but he's also a metal man.
I would say you need that.
That shit is hard.
You're awesome.
All right. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. This is part two with Tim Lambesis. And thank you to Tim for joining us for the first episode, which is unedited. There was no rules. We were shooting from the hip. We got past all the touchy stuff, if you want to call it that. But I felt it was a fair chat. It was a good chat. Everybody was candid. Everybody was honest. Everybody was open. And now it wasn't my intention to gloss over the As Are They Dying plans and the current Austrian death machine. And I know the tour's already been announced. We recorded that record. We recorded that episode before the tour was announced, right, Tim? Or not? Or before the record was announced? Or both?
Yeah. Like, I think it was right after the record came out, and I was getting ready to announce some tours and stuff like that. So I appreciate you coming back to be able to talk about the music, because ultimately, you know, I know all my personal life has been chaotic over the years, but you know, I started doing all this, and everything I've ever done public is because I just wanted to play music my whole life, you know.
Yeah. And I appreciate you, you know, not being bummed that it went that direction, because I think that conversation needed to be had, because not only because of our listeners and because of your and I's history, but, you know, this episode, we can focus more on the stuff that we missed, which it wasn't my intention. Again, I want to make sure.
And I mean, I'm glad that, you know, that we addressed everything in full, because it's one of those things where if you don't take enough time to properly address it, then it just comes across, you know, like we're beating around the bush or something. And I feel like my whole thing is I want to make sure I've addressed topics. So if somebody asks me a question, I'm like, hey, I've already addressed that, you know, and I can kind of refer to that. And I think that'll probably happen largely with the first half of the interview I did with you, is, you know, people ask me questions in the future. I was, hey, look, Jamie and I already talked about that, man. Just go watch that, you know? So,
yeah. And that'll also be a first for us, where we can segment the episodes and have timestamps and stuff, because this will be seen after episode 700, which was Steve Vai. So there, you know, just to give the listeners or the watchers some context, it was a long time coming for me to even relaunch the podcast. And when I did decide to relaunch the podcast and have it be different than it was before, but some of the same stuff, you know, it was the fans that put us together, basically, like, not just the people saying, hey, give Tim a chance. But we had also spoken since the last time, you know, I actually saw you in person too, since the last time I said I wouldn't have you on the podcast. And so I wanted to make sure people knew that it's like, I'm not this immovable. I don't want to say, what's the word? I guess I'm not this, this guy who's unwilling to go back on things I've said in the past or things I've quote unquote agreed to. Right. So to give you the platform to promote, to clear the air, but also to promote the music, is the point of this episode and the previous episode. It's like, you're getting a chance now to talk about Austrian Death Machine. The tour's been announced. Who is the support again? I don't have it right in front of me.
It's a European tour, Distant. They're a band from the Netherlands, and then also Ghost Iris, both European bands. So I'm really looking forward to that. But also just what you mentioned, I mean, over the last 10 years of my life, or 11 specifically, you know, I've spent the last 11 years just saying, hey, I was wrong about so many things, you know, let me come back and represent like, you know, where I'm at now this many years in the future. And I think that there's something refreshing, like even if it's just on a really lighthearted scale of like somebody talking about fitness and nutrition or whatever, and they say, hey, you know, I used to have this belief and I've learned, you know, more, and now I've sort of, adapted and changed my belief a little bit over time. And I think that even with, you know, people like me, that I understand why somebody would say, hey, like, I don't want to give this guy a platform. And I totally understand that, you know, and I appreciate you just being willing to talk to me face to face in person, and just the history we have. I think to me, those are the most exciting discussions where somebody's willing to look at a situation differently. It's not necessarily that we agree on everything now or anything by any means, but that we're able to, you know, just have this conversation. I appreciate it.
Right. And that's why I wanted the people to know that it wasn't, there's no road back. You know, why is there no road back? You know, that stuff was being said to me, and I wanted to clarify that. I never said there was no road back. I said there might not be a road back to us talking, but even that changed. And then also, you've proven there is a road back. It wasn't, you know, there was, sure, there might have been people in the industry, like, I don't want to say like actively blocking you, but maybe saying like, I don't want to work with you, or I don't want to tour with you, or whatever. But through time and through positive energy and effort, you've been, you know, showing and proving a different side of yourself. And so when the fans were bringing that to me as like evidence to maybe reconsider, I just want them to know that I was actively reconsidering that. And, you know, we did speak about that briefly when you were on, you know, how Ken, and thanks Ken, the Wrangler, AKA the Wrangler, who's, you know, who we both enjoyed having on tour, for more reasons than one, for many years. He lent you some of that credibility, right? Like Ken, I think co-signing and coming on board is it's a big deal, because Ken is respected in the scene and is an OG and has been slugging it out in the underground with Unearth for some time, and is physically capable of playing these songs and even singing some of the clean stuff, which, by the way, Ken, why don't you do that? Or do you do that now?
You got to talk to the bosses. It's a top down kind of thing in Azalea Dying, so you got to take it up with management.
Yeah, I mean, Ken has no shortage of opinions and words. So he's told me, you know, we have a long history. He's told me, hey, you're a complete idiot. I can't believe how much of a moron you are. And but at the same time, we've talked through and we're friends and we love each other. You know, so I mean, well, that's what I love about Ken, is that you could have him on a show like this. You never have to worry if he's like holding back his true thoughts or not, you know.
I'll say this to your viewership, you know, like there, I definitely did receive a bunch of phone calls and stuff from close friends, because the decision I made, you know, to maneuver from you know, Unearthed to Azalea Dying was a shocking one for a lot of my friends and people around me, and you know, there was definitely reasons why I stepped out of the band that I started. You know, for just on a personal level with the guys, I still love those guys, every single one of them. But you know, my relationship with Tim has always been really strong, and I do understand him, and I know exactly what was happening during the time where, you know, all the stuff did happen. So, and even after, we didn't keep, you know, close after that, but like, we definitely rekindled our friendship. But I'll say that, you know, I am a true believer of people, you know, figuring out their issues, you know, making right of what was wrong. And Tim has really showed me, especially with Jamie, I think, you know, the group of friends we've had when we were kids and stuff like that. He showed me that, you know, there is a really gentle, good side to him. I mean, he spends most of his time, other than writing music, helping people. And I'll just say that he and I just lost a crew member in our camp, Otto, who is probably one of my closest friends in the world. And through a time of misery, you know, he lent me his car. And you know, and when I was going to the airport, he introduced me to a gentleman who just got out of prison, who he's been helping in the system and all that other stuff. And he bought him a car and like, you know, and like, hey, dude, I'll work it out later kind of thing. And this guy like gave me one of the like best moments of my life, where, you know, I was saying goodbye to a friend, and yet I was getting dropped off at the airport by someone's life that was just beginning. And Tim's life now is dedicated to that kind of behavior. And that's very rare, you know, and I do appreciate it.
Yeah. And I think that we touched on some of that stuff, right? Last episode, Tim, was where we were saying there's a bigger conversation to be had about prison reform and about just the penal system as a whole and the road back. And unfortunately you had to do all this in the public eye, whereas with some of maybe our friends from the past and people who have done worse crimes, more violent crimes, they're not tried in the court of public execution, but we have had to deal with that in our private lives, where we say, okay, is this person trustworthy? Is this person still a danger to others? And do we want to support their rehabilitation? And that's something that a lot of people are going to have to face in their life, or have faced with family members or with close friends, where, you know, you're not in their lives every day, but you care about them and you want to see them do better for themselves and their friends, but you don't know what they're going through. You don't know the struggles and you don't know the darkness and how it can consume someone to the point where if you were that close, you would want to help lead them from the dark river, get them away from that. And so that was something I thought about when Ken joined the band, like, okay, maybe Ken's a confidant, maybe Ken's a pillar, you know, for Tim to stay on the straight and narrow, or maybe the two of them are fucking plotting to kill somebody. I don't know, but that's what we're going to air out on this episode, right? Is like,
yeah. Well, I can say, you know, Ken knows this, even just, you know, personal life stuff that's not big and huge in public. Just talking to him about, you know, I think we all make mistakes on a daily level. I mean, little small stuff, and just Ken supporting me being the best version of myself. You know, we've gone on a vacation together at this point. We went to Greece together. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of stuff. You know, our wives get along great, you know, and all kinds of stuff. So I think that for me, it's a weird conversation because there's the public part of it where it's like we're talking about how everything in my life has happened in such a public way. And then there's the like little behind the scenes stuff that I don't always want to bring attention to, like what Ken told you about, like the guy that I'm helping out, right? Like, or one of the guys I'm helping out, I wouldn't never go publicly talk about that because it's just like, I feel like it's part of my like behind the scenes life. And I'm not trying to get like credit for that per se, you know what I mean? And I'm not trying to get credit for being friends with Ken, but it is something I'm proud of. So I'm glad we're here together, you know?
Well, listen, if Ken showed up with fucking traps out to here and like some other, like some fucking, so what that like shoulder fucking round ass part over here, I'd be concerned. I'd be like,
I got it. Look at it.
I'd be like, I don't know if Tim's a good influence.
Yeah. I hold on to his, he undoes his pocket and I walk behind him and hold it.
But in all seriousness, have you guys started working on new As LA Dying music, and what is the extent of the working relationship? Will it be a co-writing thing? Can Ken submit a whole entire song that you just write the lyrics for and don't rearrange? Are you willing to let go of that rein, or are you still kind of thinking, all right, I want to have final say with arrangement, writing, riffs, lyrics, all that?
No, I mean, Ken knows that I'm actually quicker to adapt to want to incorporate and work with Ken. Just the guys in general. For Phil and I, just as a quick history, we started writing this record during, you know, parts of the pandemic and stuff like that. So like, there's a lot of it that sort of developed in demos that Phil and I had exchanged. So there's a little bit of like a learning process where it was like, Ken and the guys came along in a situation where it's like, well, Phil and I sort of already had the gears in motion. So it was kind of like a hard thing for us to adapt to. And I feel like we learned now what we could do writing a record together, which is kind of beautiful and unfortunate at the same time. It's good in that, like, it's a great chance for Phil and I to represent all these ideas we've been working on. But we didn't get to fully incorporate everybody the way that we'd like to. And the one song where I think Ken and I worked on the most, which is really exciting for us, is going to end up being a single. So like, I feel like it's an introduction to the, to like the potential of, you know, of new records in the future with just like a little stamp now, but I think like a larger stamp in the future, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. Because because what was it? It was 2019 when the last one came out, and then you started working on the next one before. But what would happen if Ken brought like a heater that was as commercially competitive or maybe a bigger hit than one of the songs? Like, if he was coming with some heat, do you bump a Phil song? Like, how do you navigate those types of situations?
Yeah, the good thing is we're all just trying to get the best sounding album, and there's a lot of hot opinions on, like, you know, we each have different musical tastes. So like, even Phil and I, just with our 20 plus year history, I tend to lean, like, he's a much more accomplished guitar player than me, right? So my riffs are generally simpler, and I'm writing a little bit more like heavy oriented, and he's writing very melodically complex, right? And so sometimes I'll be like, no, my idea is better, and he'll be like, no, my idea is better, and we'll have to like agree to disagree, and we have to figure out how to like handle all that. But with that said, I mean, if there's actually a couple riffs of Ken's that I really wanted to explore more, that the song as a whole wasn't fully ready. So it was like, all right, cool, now Ken and I need to sit down and do this. And so that's what, when I refer to like the single as an example, it's like the single took a little bit of a different direction because Ken was able to get it involved, and then, you know, but the core riff came from Phil. And so it's this really kind of cool concept where like we've scratched the surface of what can happen. And if in the future Ken had, you know, four great songs, and it meant that, like, you know, Phil brings in six, I bring in, you know, four, and Ken brings in four, and his four are better, and if none of mine make the record, that's fine with me, you know? So I just want the best record.
Yeah. And if I wrote something too, and it was sick, I think they'd probably say it's too Eastern Mass. So I don't know.
Right on. I feel like you're kind of in almost a similar, but not as, I don't want to say a similar situation as like when Gary Holt was in the band with Slayer with Repentless, but it was kind of like that record was almost kind of finished already. Yeah. And then in a way it helps Slayer because people go get their record because they think it's going to be a bunch of Gary Holt riffs. But then it also kind of hurts Slayer when they find out he didn't really have much on there. I think he had a couple solos. Someone might want to fact check me on this, but if I remember correctly, I think it was like he had a couple solos, but he didn't have any songwriting credits. So then it was like, all right, well, we're excited to see what they do for the next one if they have Gary Wright. And then we didn't get a record with Gary writing for Slayer. So, I would have been kicking myself if I didn't bring that up, because I think we kind of want to hear like some, you know, alarm clock riffs from Ken with you singing on them and see what that would be like. Right.
Ken's comment was that there was a riff that was actually particularly sick that Ken submitted. But it did truly feel very Unearth and Eastern Mass. Phil hit us up and was like, it's a great riff, I won't deny that, but it just sounds so Eastern Mass, and Western, it's East Coast, like Western Mass. Yeah. And I was like, all right, I can see both sides of this equation here. But I think the cool part is, like I said, Ken and I got to work particularly on one song the most. We all worked on it, but in terms of that, that's the song where we showed, okay, with Ken's involvement, this is a really cool song, and it's a really cool layer. So it sort of like introduces the potential, but you're right. It is a little bit like the Slayer situation in that he came in when we have already written part of the record. So the key is just, you know, like Slayer, we can't retire, you know, before the next record. So
yeah. To all you Eastern Mass, like metalcore mosh bands, I got riffs as only 9 to 1. They're for sale. Maybe $10 a riff. I don't know.
So do you put this standalone single on the record as well? Or are you meaning that this is a single?
It's on the record. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's on the record for sure.
All right. And then what about Ryan? Because obviously Ryan's an established, you know, accomplished player on his own too. Does he sing the cleans on the record?
Yeah.
What is his involvement like?
So on old As the Dying records, there's like these occasional like unknown moments where I'll sing like a clean here and there just occasionally, you know, like Nothing Left or like a couple of our songs and stuff like that. But on this record, I sang literally like two lines and Ryan sang everything. In terms of the clean singing, Ryan sang everything else in the whole record. And so his stamp is like very sonically obvious because it's Ryan's voice. And I think one of the issues people have is like, dang, his voice sounds amazing, but doesn't sound like Josh's voice, but it's not supposed to. He's supposed to sound like Ryan. So it's like some people just get caught up on the fact that it doesn't sound like Josh, but that the people who can see Ryan for who Ryan is, it's like, this is, in my opinion, Ryan's best vocal performance on a record he's done. So I feel like Ryan crushed it. You know, I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about it, Ken?
Yeah, no, Ryan is one of my favorite humans of all time. And if there was ever a replacement for Josh, it would be him. I don't think there's anybody else. His performance on this record is really good. He's just, you know, very consistent, he does what he does, and he has such a great attitude towards everything, life and music and everything. He's just like a really great bandmate in general. But yeah, musically, I'm with Tim. Like, people just say, oh, you know, they always remember the glory days, right? And, oh yeah, Josh has been on all these records and he doesn't sound like Josh, and I like Josh better. It's like, yeah, you can get in the same conversation between like Howard and Jesse from Killswitch. It's like, they're both awesome. Like, just deal with it. You know, it's they're both good. Who cares?
And Josh used to get crap all the time about not sounding like Clint, you know, our previous bass player before that. So it's like,
right.
I mean, you know, history repeats itself. I feel like with Josh, he had a lot more records under his belt, obviously. So Ryan's getting, he's in a tougher spot than Josh was, but they're all incredible, talented people. I mean, actually, speaking of that, just on a quick side note, Clint and I hung out like 2 weeks ago, and you know, we texted each other all the time, back and forth ideas. And I'm like slowly reeling him into like doing some music again. And so I have some songs, some demos I sent his way, and I was like, hey man, if you want to do some music, like just you and me, it's like no pressure, no label, just like whenever you feel like doing it, let's do it. And he's down. So I mean, I'm not trying to make this like a big public announcement, but I keep in touch. I mean, these guys are my friends. Like, you know, just because we haven't created songs together in recent times doesn't mean that, you know, I don't have love for them. And so I think one of the things people have is it's like that they'll think Ryan versus Josh versus Clint, you know, like they're all enemies or something, but they all like each other, you know. I mean, they're all friends with each other.
Milwaukee Metal Fest returns home to the Rave Eagles Club May 17th through the 19th. Over 75 bands across 3 days, featuring Blind Guardian, Camelot, Symphony X, Overkill, Mr. Bungle, Testament, Hatebreed, Municipal Waste, Slaughter to Prevail, Avatar, In Flames, I Am Morbid, and many more. Plus a VIP pre-party to kick things off on Thursday. Don't miss the return of Milwaukee Metal Fest, May 17th through the 19th at the Rave Eagles Club. Single and multi-day packages are available now at therave.com.
Hey everybody, it's Jamie letting you know today's episode is brought to you by Dunable Guitars. Go to Dunable Guitars after the show today and get yourself an awesome guitar or bass. You'll see what they have in stock. You can buy direct and you can save 10% off your favorite new riff stick. Maybe you want the Asteroid, maybe you want the Narwhal. Josta podcast listeners get 10% off when you use the code MMF24 until May 20th. Big thanks to Dunable Guitars for not only presenting the Milwaukee Metal Fest, but sponsoring the podcast as well. They're a quality product. I can't wait to get one to hang up in the studio here. You'll see them all over at DunableGuitars.com. Use the code MMF2024. No, I'm sorry. Use the code MMF24. While I have you, today's episode is also brought to you by IndieMerchStore.com. And right now, Indie Merch Store is giving Josta podcast listeners 10% off when you use the code JOSTA10 over at IndieMerchStore.com. You'll see they got all the Carnifex restocks. They got Vitriol gear. They got accessories, music, pre-orders. Like when you go to IndieMerchStore.com, you'll see you click that pre-order page. They got the Unleash the Archers vinyl. They have a bunch of merch from them. They got Ulcerate pre-order if you want to get the double 12 inch. They got, I mean, some of the stuff is selling out, so you better head on over there quick. I see they got the Fallujah special edition 12 inch. You'll see it all over at IndieMerchStore.com. Use the promo code JOSTA10. Now back to the show.
Yeah. Right. And Ryan has a good ear for melody, always has. And his band was an established, you know, very accomplished band already. So it wasn't like he's coming in and bringing that sound from the band. It's the As I Lay Dying sound. He's just adding to it with his style, which actually really, I agree with Ken. It really does fit perfectly. I wouldn't have thought of anybody else besides him. I actually tried to think of someone else who I thought could fit that role, and it was very hard to think of anyone beyond Ryan. But did you allow him to write melodies, or were you kind of like showing him the melody and having him perform?
Yeah, actually, this is one of the first times ever where there's a song where Ryan just was like, man, I've had some stuff like pretty heavy on my heart lately, and just been kind of going through some, you know, just normal personal, you know, personal anxieties and things that you work through almost like in a journaling fashion when you're like writing lyrics. And he said, hey, I really feel like this fits the chorus. And I said, dude, I'm not going to change your lyrics. Like, that's a great chorus. Like, let's just, and of course I had to give context to the song. I had to write the verses and everything else. But, you know, I'm very open. Like I said, you know, like, I just want the best sounding records, and there's really no ego from me of like trying to control the situation. I just, I've always had this view with Asla Dying, with different members and stuff. Just, hey, I want to run a band, you know, which in some regards it's a business, but mostly to me it's an opportunity to create art. And that's like why I love songwriting. And whoever wants to show up for work on Monday morning, let's show up for work on Monday morning. Let's do this. If you're not interested and you don't want to show up for work, I'm not even gonna be mad at you. Like, I'll keep all the gears moving, because I'm not saying that I want to do this by myself and Phil, but like if we had to do this by ourselves, we could. But it gets better when extremely talented people come and add to the equation.
Yeah. Do you, when you heard some of the Ryan's recordings, Ken, did you have this sort of same parallel thinking as far as what could be done with the melody for those types of chorusy parts or for those types of more melodic parts?
You know, what it comes down to is I've never written an As I Lay Dying record, right? So I'm more so in the, you know, if I look at it as sports, if I was traded to a new hockey team, right, I do what I do, and I just kind of like make the assists to the good players, right? So in this scenario, I was just kind of absorbing from the background and just waiting to hear demos. But, you know, really what it comes down to is that Ryan did a great job. And I didn't really hear the melodies any different than what they would have been. Certain songs I like better than others, but I mean, when you're in a creative element, like, you feel that way anyway. But just like any other band, right? The song that you like the least is going to be the most popular. Like, who cares, right? That's the hit. But no, Ryan did a great job, and the melodies are good. And, you know, I think the band really did work on it. I wasn't there for it, but they worked on it as a team. I think Phil, Hiram, and, you know, Tim and Ryan were all there. I might have said whoever. I might have missed somebody. But anyway, working as a collaborating and making sure like things are right was important. And Ryan's attitude is really good too, you know.
Was there a way for you to harmonize any of this stuff? Will you do that live?
I would have liked to. I would have liked
some candy in there, you know, some.
Yeah, I would have liked to. I was in Boston at the time. So like, you know, it's an expensive flight. So I think they just kind of cut everything while they were there. I would have liked to, but maybe the next record.
Okay.
I mean, I'd say live for sure. There's definitely modern vocal production. I think about this like as a, not even with singing and pitch, but just as like a, you know, when there's like a gang vocal part and I just do four layers of me to make it sound like a gang vocal or something. It's like, uh-oh, now we have to figure out how to pull this off live. You're right. Somebody else has got it. Join me. So I mean, there's clearly like plenty of harmonies and stuff like that, and we're gonna have to cross that bridge pretty soon when we start rehearsing new songs.
To answer your question truly, Jamie, like, they, yeah, As I Lay Dying's record will be missing the Michael Anthony of metalcore, you know? So yes, you won't get those beautiful top vocals, you know?
Dude, put that on a shirt and wear that the whole tour and sell it at the merch. The Michael Anthony of metalcore. That's, I wish I thought of that. So, and then what about the release? Do you think you could get it out by the end of the year? Is there a label? Or are you going to do it on your own through an indie distro?
We have a label. We're sort of like ironing out the details, so I guess I can't really officially announce. But in terms of, we did one of those things where we projected like when the album will be coming out, and then we booked this July into August tour that we already announced for As I Lay Dying. And then we're like, well, should we make it the album release tour? Like, well, we're kind of like on the verge of like not having, we'll have the singles out for sure, but we might not have the album out, right? So then it's like, I don't want to market it as an album release tour, but clearly the singles will be out and it will be like leading to the album. And then we have a European tour that we're like working on. We haven't announced yet. Hopefully I'm not causing any problems talking about it, but that will be our European album release tour. So it's definitely happening this year, but we just have to iron out. There's a few like behind the scenes issues to iron out with the label.
What was the tour for the States?
Chelsea Green is main support, and then Entheos is opening. It's just a 3-band bill.
Oh, right. All right. Okay. Entheos, I think we're going to have the singer on the show.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I actually have never met them, but our agent was really feel like they would be a great match. I'm looking forward to the tour.
Yeah. We tried to get them on Milwaukee Metal Fest. I think they were already, maybe it was your tour that there are. Is the tour's not in May, is it?
No, we're July into August, so I'm not
okay. Sure. Okay, I think they had a different tour booked, and it wasn't going to work. Okay, and so Chelsea Grin is main support. Now, are you open to doing locals? Are you keeping it a three band package, or, and is there an opportunity for a local band who sees this? Can they hit up their local promoter and try, or is
it? I honestly don't know 100%. I think the general answer is we're not doing local openers, but with that said, I think that, you know, the promoters have the individual call if they wanted to, like, hit us up and say, hey, we really, you know, believe in this local opener or whatever. I mean, we're not trying to shoot anybody down. You know what I mean? We're just trying to keep a simple tour to where, like, you know, our local name every day and all that kind of stuff.
Well, also what bands never talk about too, is that no good deed goes unpunished, and you can put a band on and you can piss off your own road crew who's having a hard enough time just keeping the three or four bands on the package tour starting on time and getting everything running smoothly. Then you throw a local band back there with their guests, and they need catering and they need a dressing room and yada, yada, yada. Next thing you know, it's they're upset that they're playing 20 minutes after the doors. And you're like, yo, we didn't even want to add you, and you're upset, and it's a sold out show.
Grumpies, and then they think we're all jerks. You know what I mean?
Right. So it's kind of like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But I do like it when I see some headliners giving that opportunity. And I have noticed with this upcoming Crowbar tour that the shows that we put on two locals are way outselling the shows where we only added one. So for certain bands, it can work. And for certain venues and certain promoters, like certain venues and certain promoters are just more local band and fan friendly. And it's not to take away anything from the bigger venues, or it's just, it's different strokes for different folks. But for those of you who are interested in the business side of things, and even when it doesn't serve us to tell you these things, we try to just be transparent.
I definitely like to make a recommendation. Chicago, Effluvium.
And yes, shout out.
And then Pops, Conquest.
Oh, shit. There's a blast from the past. Shout out to Conquest.
Effluvium, though. One of your favorites.
Who's the best local yokel? Like, who's the one that stood the chance? Like, who's the local yokel that stood the test of time? Because I always say, look, it doesn't fucking matter. Jam with your friends, jam with anybody. It's better to play a gig in front of nobody than to have no gig and sit at home and fucking watch TV. I really think that we're going to look back on all this shit, and it's not going to matter. Because I look at like Nikki Sixx the same way as I look at like the local dude. He's just like, you're just like a Nikki Sixx who just didn't get an opportunity. Like, I don't really break it down any other way. I don't put certain people on a pedestal and certain people not. I just think it's the luck of the draw sometimes. Definitely talent helps and hustle helps, but also there's some that you're like, they had no talent, no hustle.
Yeah. They blew up. My favorite local band, I would say, of all time, since we're reminiscing, you know, old school, Die My Will was my favorite, like,
great
local band ever.
So, dude, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I, for the 30th anniversary, I just posted on our fucking Patreon a full set from Hatebreed at the Shelter, opening up for Bloodlit and Entombed, with Jeff from Fine Line playing drums. Shout out to Jeff, was my King Diamond buddy, driving the van every day. And I think Jeff went on to be a Weather Channel correspondent, if someone wants to look that up. Or Jeff, just hit us up.
Yeah. By the way,
shout out to Jeff.
By the way, I just found a VHS at my house. Oh, sorry, camcorder tape of Hatebreed playing Sharkies with Unearthed for the very first time in 2000 or 99 or somewhere around there.
Dude, that was a hard show. Shout out to New Hampshire. Very underrated state. doesn't get the love it should. New Hampshire should get more praise and more love. New Hampshire has the Bruisers. Fucking Steven Tyler lives there, gets a tax benefit. There's a lot of pros to New Hampshire.
At that show, you had Riggs on drums and you had Boulder on guitar. It was hard.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Lou. Shout out to Riggs. Shout out to Riggs. Just did the Smoke AD. Yep. Smoke AD, new song out today. By the time people hear this, it'll be out for a week or two. But what were you going to say, Tim?
The guitar player for Austrian Death Machine. He's a New Hampshire resident. So Ken's good friends with him, actually. I think you guys play poker together somewhat regularly, right?
He called me 2 days ago to say, hey, since you're not on tour when Tim's on tour with me, can I borrow like you know, your guitar cases and gear? I was like, yeah, of course. I'm like, take it and break it. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark and Ken are guaranteed to never have an overlap because they share the same front man. So.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. And Ken, can you drive up there and fucking shoot? This guy must have an arsenal, right? Like he's got like bazookas, a flamethrower. Like, can you go up there and just fucking wild out or what?
Yeah, I got guns, but yeah, I'm not.
But you don't have those New Hampshire guns. It's different in Mass, right?
Well, I got some New Hampshire guns in Mass. So, but Mark is more of a four wheeling type. So,
all right. Mudden.
What's that?
Mudden.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He like four wheels with his kids and stuff. He goes off, but, yeah, it's awesome.
Have you ever been to Gigi Allen's birthplace in New Hampshire?
No, why?
Oh, dude, you got to go up there. There's like I always wanted to go. I drove through that area once and I went by that theater. I think the theater's still for sale. It's like a theater where the elites, like the Dukakis's and shit, used to go up there and they'd have their weird fucking, I don't know what they do. We don't even want to talk about that. Whatever they do up in the woods at their fucking weird, I don't know what's going on. But yeah, he grew up very close to there.
For anyone that's watching this podcast or listening, just feel free to listen to Scissor Fights, New Hampshire's All Right song, if you want to just understand what we're talking about.
Yes. There you go. Another one. Very underrated. But see, I wouldn't call them local because they were like regional. They were legit. Like they had like they did tours and shit. I think they toured Europe, right?
Yep. Yep. Oh, by the way, one more local band. Oh, sorry, Tim. One more local band, Sam Black Church. Sorry. Had to say it.
Yeah, but I would say they're more regional because we loved them in Connecticut too.
Okay.
Well, you guys like, what's wild about that is I had never heard Sam Black Church, and then Ken was talking all about it, and then he was like, "Oh, by the way, I'm at the show at the Palladium. It's sold out." And I'm like, "A band I've never heard of in my life because you know, being from San Diego, and obviously I respect the band, but I don't know. It blew my mind that a band that I've never heard of in my life would sell out like a you know whatever the Palladium is, a couple thousand." 3,000, something like that.
Oh yeah. No, that's why I always say one man's local band is another man's arena headliner. Like it's that's the beauty of this shit. Like Sam Black Church is to Boston, what E-Town is to
Jersey,
New Jersey.
Yeah.
But who is the E-Town or who is the Sam Black of San Diego?
I mean, I wouldn't say that they sold out arenas or anything like that, but when I was a kid, No Innocent Victim was like the biggest deal. I mean, they were obviously they got signed to Victory and did worldwide tours and stuff like that. But for me as a San Diegan, that was like the band that the scene was built around when I was like in high school, essentially.
Yeah, you know the biggest Christian hardcore record has still yet to be released. I feel like you were saying how history repeats itself. As soon as you said that, I thought we're going to hear another like No Innocent Victim type band, or we're going to hear another Norma Jean or As LA Dying. And it's going to take it to the next level and set a new precedent, kind of like similar to what we're seeing now with bands like Slaughter to Prevail and Knocked Loose, where they're taking essentially what was already built by other bands and had a foundation, but they're setting a new precedent. And I feel like the Christian scene is due. I feel like the only thing they've been missing is that culturally significant song that puts it all together and sums it all up in one song. Would you agree?
Striper. Striper was
no, like
in terms of on the horizon, like coming out in the next 5 years.
Yes.
I mean, I could picture it happening. I could also picture the song's not there. I mean, it really comes down to the song, you know, and that's what's funny about regardless of a person's belief system, it still comes down to the quality of the song, right? Because like when Norma Jean's Bless the Martyr came out, I mean, whether you believed in the same, you know, theological point of views as them or not, like that was exciting to hear at that time. You know what I mean? So I feel like the songs are really ultimately what matter.
Right. Like Krishna, I still don't have the slightest fucking clue what's going on in the Hare Krishna religion, but put on fucking Saranagati or what was the other, they had another hit. What was the other Shelter hit? I liked the one where everybody said they sold out, but I was like, this is great. They didn't sell the Roadrunner one. Maybe Mike can look it up. I think it's called Here We Go Again. or Here We Go. That was a hit, and motherfuckers tried to hate on it, but it was like, why are you hating on it? Because it's Hare Krishna band.
I think a lot of people are in the same shoes as you. Like, they don't fully even understand what that is. I mean, they know it's somehow related to Hinduism and one of the Hindu gods. That's probably the most in-depth information people, the average person, knows about Krishna, you know. So,
or like 108, they had that song Deathbed. It was hard. That was close. I was like, if another band came out with something this hard and just got it to the next level, I felt like the Christian bands, they came close. Like, some of them were 85%, 75%, but no one had that 100% hit. Ken brought up Striper, but they never had, I love Striper. They have a Striper hit. They don't have like a universal hit. Is that fair?
Striper?
Yeah.
I mean,
they have a huge In God We Trust. And
I don't know. I thought that
honestly,
was
it's huge. Honestly, but it's like a ballad.
Yeah, you're right. That's pretty fucking.
Don't go there. Striper was sick. They invented heavy guitar.
I agree. Believe me, I fully support. I want Striper. I'll book them right now on Milwaukee Metal Fest with Behemoth, and we'll have a debate.
Jamie, since you're like the managerial type, I got an idea. We'll start the Christian band that you want, but they'll be like really big, strong guys, and they'll be called Body of Christ, and they'll just be all like big guys.
No, dude, I tried. I was in the studio. You could bring a horse to water. You can't drink. You can't make him drink. I tried. I'm not going to say what band it was, but I had him. I was ready. I had the Our Father, but like it was one breakdown after breakdown. And it was like, it was so hard. And I was like, you're literally here. I'm giving you a money printing machine. You're throwing it away and you're going and buying fake pennies on Amazon for
$12. That band should have a confession booth at the merch area so they can confess their sins from the pit. You know what I mean? That's how deep it goes.
Oh, dude, it was right. Wait, what year did that movie Noah come out? Did you guys see that?
No,
I know what you're talking about. I never saw it, though.
All right. I went back to give it a chance because I'm pretty sure the dude who directed it was like a music video director. If it's the same dude I'm thinking of, he started in the music world. So I was like, you know what? It looked like total dog shit, but I'm going to go give it a second a chance because it came. I think it went on up on Netflix or something. Can someone look up what year it came out? The Noah movie. It's with, I think, Anthony Hopkins and,
isn't it like Russell Crowe or something like that? Or no, that's one of the other.
Yes, it is. Okay. Yep. Anthony Hopkins plays. Does he play Josephus or who does Anthony Hopkins play in the movie? We don't want to go down. Don't get crazy with the Josephus. I don't know if you guys know about Josephus. We don't want to get, that's a whole, we could do a whole other podcast just about Josephus.
All I know about the movie you're talking about is the thumbnail I saw and somehow there was like giant, like,
rocks,
rock creatures and stuff.
Yeah. The rocks turned everybody off. I think the rocks, people literally were like, boo, in the theater. Like cause they're supposed to be like the fallen angels.
Yeah. And I think that's taken from one of those like apocryphal texts. So then they probably like alienated the actual diehard Christian fan base by like using apocryphal texts and stuff like that. So.
Right.
It wasn't the smartest move.
But if you came out with a hard album, like a Passion of the Christ concept album, and it was hard and you had Mel Gibson executive produce.
I think Mel Gibson might be angry enough to be a metal frontman. You know, he might just.
You could probably use actual Mel Gibson lines in. All right,
a guy who made four albums worth of Arnold Schwarzenegger quotes. So, you know, all things are possible.
Seriously. All right, Mike says Methuselah. Yeah, so Anthony Hopkins played Methuselah. But just the Noah portion and some of the interaction with Methuselah and just certain books up until that point, there's so much hard fodder to take from for songs. But I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like it just hasn't happened yet. If anybody wants to put in the chat a fucking hard ass Christian band that's going to be the next Striper, if we're missing out.
Well, they weren't Striper, but No Innocent Victim was a huge influence on me as a It's funny because those were the guitar riffs I learned first when I was playing guitar. And then I got more into metal because, as you know, like, you know, once you get past a certain point of playing guitar, like hardcore is fun, but you kind of want to, you know, mess around with some solos and stuff like that. And so that's actually, I was into that style of hardcore first as a guitar player, and then sort of eventually moved into, like, you know, some of those like European, Scandinavian In Flamesy type influences.
Yeah. See, that's a good thing to bring up too, for other people who are listening to this, just for the business aspect or just for insight into maybe growing your taste or growing your local band or label or distro or whatever. You don't have to be afraid of growing out of something or getting into something different, like gravitating to something different. There was a guy who's coming to our show on Sunday. He's in a black metal band, but grew up listening to hardcore, but now is in a very credible, very big black metal band. Everybody starts somewhere, right? Like, you have to have your gateway, and you can change. You can move with the times, and it's okay. Like, if you, I happen to just stay in the one caveman lane all 30 years, but that's what I like. You know, like, I like a caveman riff. I love some noodling. Like, if I listen to Empty Hearts, I'll fucking still get pumped. If I listen to fucking Killswitch, Unearth, like, I like some sweeps, but I also like just a fucking beat down start to finish. And maybe with some Christian lyrics over it, I could be swayed.
Well, I think what's cool is to be able to like both. It's funny because people like, they develop over time, right? Say somebody, they grew up listening to punk and hardcore. That's like, for me, I was more on the punk hardcore side because San Diego is like the surf punk, and, you know, all the Fat Records era bands are all from California and stuff. So I liked that stuff. And then as I got like more into metal, people were like, oh, well, you can't like that if you're like true metal. And it's like, well, why can't I like both? Why can't I like the punk I grew up on? And, you know, I mean, Asinine doesn't get the true metal tag, but, you know, I mean, in terms of like, there's those types of people that throw around terms like that, and I think it's ridiculous. It's like, you can like both things. That's crazy.
Yeah, true with a V, like those dudes, like anything that's spelled with a V.
Yeah.
They don't want you liking Lagwagon. They don't want you liking, we just had Josh Todd from Buckcherry on, and he was down with all that shit. He was down for all those bands. Who's the known innocent victim of that scene?
Of like the Fat Records scene?
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, Good Riddance was my favorite of that era because it was like they had the like aggressiveness of a hardcore band, but the melodies of a punk band.
We have a line in a song straight to your face that says, "Good Riddance, we hated you anyway." And people were mad at me for like 5 years. They thought I was dissing Good Riddance. I'm like, that's just a saying. Like, it's not, they don't have a trademark on the saying. Like, I'm not, has nothing to do with the band.
You know, what's unfortunate about that band title is it's such a common phrase that when you say, like, you know, hey, whatever your service is, Alexa or Google or whatever, hey, play Good Riddance, it doesn't even play the band Good Riddance. It plays like a what is it? Who's that band? Green Day. It plays a Green Day song. It frustrates me.
Another lesson learned for anybody up and coming. Don't be a fucking Google nightmare like Ringworm, the band. Google nightmare trying to fucking find a Ringworm album. You Google that, you're like, Jesus. It's Good Riddance, Ringworm. Yeah, you got it. That's no wonder all these bands are coming up with shit with like words with C's but with a K instead. I thought that was gone for good after Korn and Linkin Park. It came back harder than ever. I get at least one word band that should be spelled with a C that's spelled with a K a week now. That's back.
So they're
good bands.
So let me rewind, like, I don't know, 10 years ago. This is where one of those scenarios, like the band name thing, kind of played into our favor. Unearth got booked for like a crap ton of money to go play Spain before, like, in our Euro tour. I don't know what happened. We show up there and like we just got there and we're like setting up. We had no idea who was on the bill. No one really looked into it. And we knew the headliner was Pearl Jam. So we figured it was like a European run. Like, oh, this is sick. It's like Pearl Jam's headlining, but there's going to be a bunch of metal bands and we're going to play on the metal stage. We definitely played the show. The crowd looked at us like we had 10 heads. And Buzz and I were like, we got police escorted like out of there. And Buzz and I were looking at each other going, yeah, they thought we were under oath. Oh, man. like, because Trevor gets up there. He's like, what the fuck's up, you fucking butt? You know, and like everyone's just like, whoa.
but they didn't really book you thinking it was under oath.
Yeah, they did. Yes, they did. 1000%.
Come
there was
on.
Not a single metal band. When we looked back, there was no other metal bands on there.
Was the guaranteed like disproportionate?
It was like, super high. Yeah.
Was it like 45 G's? How much?
It was probably like 20 or 30.
Okay.
And we were like, oh shit. And like, we were getting police escorts in and out of the place, like back to the airport and stuff. And Buzz and I were just like, oh yeah. Wrong.
Dude, you might be onto something. Like, you know, the Google nightmare, you would actually, like, if you owned Goggle or whatever, if you owned Google with 2 G's, you're getting paid because it's just a mistake when people type it in, but then they have ads on that page.
Yep.
So like 2 million people make that mistake every day. So they're getting 2 million hits every day. Maybe I got to start a band called like Meshuggah without the H or whatever.
Like, yeah, Ma, and then regular yeah. Sugar.
And yeah. Put your shit up on Spotify and you're just like, you're just getting hit after hit or fucking Spirit Blocks or fucking, you just put up like, Pearl Gem.
They're smart. Like, say you tell, you know, your Alexa, Google, whatever it is, play some like chill music, something like that. There'll be some dude out there who has an album titled "Chill Music" that he did on purpose, just so that, because instead of playing the playlist, sometimes it'll play some obscure album called "Chill Music" or something like that. It's like, dude, this guy's a genius. I mean, I hate him because I didn't want to listen to his music, but he's a genius.
Like the guy who figured out the blank song for 99 cents that sold 1 million, it's platinum because everybody just didn't want a team from Ed Sheeran being blasting when they went into their car. Because yep. He was smart doing it as a team because that's the first song when you would plug in your phone.
Yeah, or, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So then the guy just sold a blank fucking MP3 in iTunes and people bought it so that it would and put it as their first song. But what about if you were in Pearl Jam and your name was Jim and then you went solo and you were just Pearl Jim? I mean, you're paid, right? Like that.
Yeah, Pearl Ken.
So, all right. So the Austrian Death Machine tour is first, then the As They Lay Dying U.S. tour, then you're going to announce an As They Lay Dying Europe tour.
Yeah. So I'll be announcing an As They Dying. Well, I won't, but I'll be announcing the As They Dying. Or we will be announcing As They Dying Europe tour, and then I'll be announcing the Austrian Death Machine U.S. dates. Those are all like later in the year
for the fall.
Yeah. So what ended up happening too, just for the timing, is that I was going to do the Austrian Death Machine record after this As They Lay Dying record, because the As They Lay Dying record is obviously a priority. But just with everything kind of being delayed slowly over time, and Phil just called me one day and was like, "Hey man, like, if you want to do the Austrian Death Machine record now, you probably have like more than enough time to just do it." So I switched the order. And it's easy to produce a record when you're solely the one in charge, right? So with Austrian Death Machine, I work with extremely talented other people, but you know, I get all the final call and everything, because in one sense, it's a one-man band. In the other sense, it actually has a band. So I get kind of the best of both worlds in terms of being productive, but having a lot of really talented people to work on it. And Ken knows this, that a couple of the super heavy ones on the Austrian Death Machine record are songs I submitted for the As They Lay Dying record, and they were just like a little too deathcore leaning or a little too heavy leaning. And so we just were like, all right, like this, I'm not going to like throw the song away. It's a great song, you know? So,
there's one that's real good. And I'm a bit bent that we're not playing that one every night.
Yeah. But Ken and I kind of have the inside opinion of like, we both really liked a couple of those. But with that said, I mean, it's one of those things where the majority of that record was written solely for Austrian Death Machine, but occasionally I'll just have a great riff that I'm not going to just throw away. You know what I mean? And so there's a little bit of a crossover naturally.
Now, what about re-recording old albums with this lineup, or doing a compilation of old songs with this lineup, like reimagining some of the catalog?
Well, I don't know how Ken feels about it, but for me personally, like, I listened to specifically our album Shadows of Security, and I sang each of those songs like as a single vocal take. And then, you know, if there was obviously like a glaring mistake, then I'd go in and punch in that line or whatever. But it was like back in the day when you know, we were in the studio paying for like actual, you know, I didn't have a home studio at the time, paying like a lot of money for the studio. And I was like, all right, you got 2 days to do vocals for this entire record. I was like, oh crap, I should just sing each song once, right? You know, because and your voice can only handle so much and all that. So I listened back to that record personally and I'm like, man, I hate the vocals on there, because it sounds like exactly what it was, you know, just like a one take. it's almost basically a live, the record's not live, but the vocals are basically live. And I've always wanted to re-record that, and the 20th anniversary is coming up next year. So I'll push for at least a couple of those songs to get re-recorded, but I'm not sure how the other guys feel about it.
And also, beneath the Encasing of Ashes, right? Like, do you have the rights back from that to Pluto, or was that, does Metal Blade have the rights to that?
I just, you know, I'd have to actually go down a rabbit hole to figure out. I think we would be allowed to re-record it. I just wouldn't be interested because I feel like that was, by the way, as a songwriter, I had been playing guitar for like a year at that point when I wrote that record, you know? So it's like there's cool energy. And I think what's cool about that is I demonstrated, I understand this concept of like creating emotion and energy. I just didn't really have like the chops as a guitar player. And I think that's really like how Azodine expanded over the years is like, you know, Phil came in and he's much more of an elaborate guitar player than I am. So he got to just keep expanding on what I did with Pray the Words Collapse and stuff like that. So, but I'm sure you have songs in your own catalog. Even if the fans like it, I don't really like it. You know what I mean? So
I'm considering re-recording some of it and reimagining some of it, just doing some of the things that I wished I had done originally, but yeah, was limited by time and budget.
Yeah.
But that record I thought of maybe not re-record the whole thing, but definitely a track or two to kind of break up the other tracks, if you were to maybe make it sort of a compilation and not just a reimagining of one record.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the compilation stuff is more interesting, but, I guess that's a, can't always jokes around and say, well, I got to talk to the bosses about that one, you know? So like, I'm only one half of that equation. There,
Ken's face already gave us the answer multiple times throughout listening to both of us talk.
Nodding over to Ken, I don't know how you feel about it.
I feel, in the famous words of 25 to Life, let the past be the past.
Hey, everybody. Quick interruption. Letting you know, today's episode is brought to you by Century Media Records. After the podcast today, check out centurymedia.store. You will see they have a ton of killer pre-orders up now, like Psychotic Waltz. They got new releases from Bewitcher, Mayhem, Skeletal Remains, Angelus Apatrita, who yours truly sang on one of their songs. Go pick up an LP and bring it to Milwaukee Metal Fest, and I'll sign it at the pre-party or at any of the signings. And while you're there at Milwaukee Metal Fest, you can check out the Century Media stage. Big thanks to centurymedia.store. No promo code needed. Link is always in the show notes. And while I have you, big thank you to everyone who's over at patreon.com/josta. That is where you will hear a bunch of extra content that's not on the free show and exclusive podcasts that come out every week on patreon.com/josta. Link will be in the show notes. Now back to the show. But Ken, here's the thing, man. Trust me, because I look at the TuneCore back end and then I look at all the accounting and I look at all the streams. To me, if you're part of the current touring act and the goal of the current touring act is to create interest and build on the current thing, it would behoove everybody, if you can get to recouping it quicker, even if you don't share in the pub, splitting all that up once you recouped is pretty easy to get to now when you own the master. So instead of having like this deep song on your Spotify that gets no fucking streams, that's making pennies per year, you could reimagine it, repackage it, remarket it. And who knows, maybe there would be a fan interest enough to make it one of your top streaming songs, or at least a cool catalog piece where then you bust it out a couple times in the live set when you go out to record it, but you're not. Yeah, I get it. The interest is for you to do new stuff.
Yeah. You know what the hired guitar player from Band X would say, like the new guy, like, yeah, let's do that. Let's re-record everything. And I understand the business side of it, but honestly, like having been there and done that and just like, you know, been in the industry for a while and now I'm on both sides, the way I see things is sometimes there's magic for as good as like, or as good or as bad a record sounds or whatever it is, that's a time and a place and a feeling. I don't have the same feelings that they had when they wrote Shadows, right? I wasn't on stage. I wasn't there for like the first like big show they ever played. And that feeling when you guys all high five backstage. So to go back and do that would almost be a mockery of like, you know, what the spirituality portion of that is. So I'm kind of against that in that sense. But if Tim came to me and said, like, listen, we're approaching the 20 year of this or whatever, and we want to do it live with this new lineup, like, one thing I can say is that, like, this particular lineup, we're very seasoned musicians. So we sound like a CD when we play, like, we're good. So, like, I would stand on that for sure, but I wouldn't go back and, like, into the studio and try to do it from scratch. Cause
I could enjoy Shadows live for the 20th anniversary. That's actually gives me a chance to re-record my vocals, even though it's live again, still at least, you know.
Also, just, and take this for what it is, it's just anecdotal, but when I was at Milwaukee Metal Fest, I had Rob Dukes there. Rob Dukes re-recorded Bonded by Blood with Exodus. Some fans would look at that as like sacrilege, but to a lot of those kids there, they didn't even know Paul Bailoff, Bonded by Blood. They knew the version that featured Rob that was released when they were 14 and they got it as one of their metal records. They knew, you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah. We don't have that. I guess in underground music or even metal, if you look at it as a smaller genre, we don't have that collective consciousness where everybody's tuned into every last thing. So it's always new to someone. And just seeing how bands are building their catalog pieces and how streaming is really about market share, I'm just always thinking on how to just build out the market share. But yeah, it doesn't work for every band. It doesn't work for every artist.
Well, and yeah.
You know what I'm slightly interested in? Oh, sorry, I would be interested to sing on an Unearthed song of your choosing, just because I was a fan and I like your songwriting, so it's like, hey, you know, if you ever want.
Well, so get this: we're moving spaces, and we have the 30th anniversary, so we're archiving everything. So we have like everything from picks to passes to T-shirts to CDs to promos. Literally everything. Like, I have a cardboard cutout of myself and I'm holding a cat. I was like, who made this? I don't know why. I come to find out it was to promote some VH1 show that I had nothing to do with, but I don't know. So we find some CDs. My stepbrother puts them up on Depop. Shout out to everybody who bought something on Depop. My stepbrother does that. He puts something up. It sells in 1 second. The guy's freaking out. It happens to be a Ken Susie project that nobody heard of. And that people want. So I'm just saying, you might not be, you could have been collecting on that shit for 10 years, but you let it go dormant.
Yeah.
And there was interest in the band.
That kid hit me up immediately, was like, Jamie was selling the Burn Your Wishes album on Debop. And I was like, oh shit, that's cool, man. Like, I'm glad he listened to it.
Bro, go re-release it, put it on streaming, because that's the thing. One man's local yokel is like, to you, you were that dude's headliner, bro.
Right.
You're Pearl Jam to him. So you're Pearl Ken to him. So you could have had thousands of those sitting in storage and been selling them for $20 a pop and made 20 grand.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Money's not a thing for me anymore. I'm just over it.
Fair enough. But explain that band, because maybe I got to buy the rights to it and put it out, re-release it.
Oh, Burn Your Wishes. Burn Your Wishes was, I was going through like kind of a pop phase where, I'm a pop writer. I've done a lot of like secret things that people don't know that I've done, that I've ghostwritten on, that I've made a good amount of money on. And I just decided to write a song, write a little EP at one point. And believe it or not, I was like sleeping over Adam D's house all the time, because we were always partying and hanging out. And I showed him some of the demos and he was like, yo, like, are you doing anything with this? And I was like, no, not really. And he's like, well, let's just do like a 4-song EP and we'll record it in my house. And we did. And then we put it out on some like weird Canadian label, like kept it like super quiet on a split. And like, I just released it to have fun.
Shit. And now we talked about it and there's going to be interest. And now this fucking Canadian yokel is going to repress it.
No,
should we edit this part out?
That label's folded. No, they won't. They're gone. That label's folded. And, they gave me the rights to it. And, I also have new material that I wrote. So if, I could re-release it with a couple new songs, and if you want it, you have it. I can send it to you after the podcast.
All right, there we go. See, we're making deals. That was one of the things I wanted to mention, because there's a lot of talent and there's a lot of vaults out there, right? So everybody that has a vault, they might think, oh, who cares? It's just some shit I fucked around with. But you don't know if that could be somebody's favorite song ever that's sitting on a vault, sitting on a hard drive. So that's my thinking. It's not always about money. People will say that. But, you know, God forbid you listen to somebody who has been in the industry this long. Like, that's what I get. I get a lot of that. Like, I get people like, no, I want to just do my own thing. And more power to them.
I get a lot of that with, I had a side band with Adam D again, Sweatpants Boners, and that, like, people beg me for that album all the time. And I'm finally going to redo, like, we're starting the band again.
Dude, it's somebody's favorite. Your favorite band is out there. You don't even know it yet. Your favorite song that you're like, Jesus, this song was written for me. It's out there. You haven't even heard it yet. I just looked up some band that Ash had on the label. I was like, wow, this is a really good song. This singer's so talented. I look her up. She's got like 600,000 followers. It's like Tim saying about Sam Black Church. You just don't know. We're in that much of a fragmented music world now that there's so much shit out there that just doesn't even get fed to you on your algorithm, especially not mine, because all I look up is Bull Thrower.
One of my favorite bands. I love Bull Thrower.
So I called Ash and I'm like, dude, this artist is amazing. Like, how do I not even know? And then we played the other one, the Thrash and Grass. Do you know them?
Yeah.
I don't know. You have to get them in.
Oh, dude, it's sick. The Howl. No. Native Howl.
Yeah.
Dude, this shit is sick. We played it on the music show. I'm like, Ash, what are you doing? Market, put the machine behind this band. This is going to be huge. Yeah. Thrash and Grass? What is it called? Someone in the chat, let me know. Chris Larice says, With Blood Comes Cleansing is hard. Christian band. I think I remember them. Yeah, they were hard.
I remember them, yeah. I mean, there's a pretty, there's the whole Face Down Records era. I don't know if, you know, if that still like has its own scene anymore, but they used to have all those Face Down Fests and all that stuff.
Shout out to Face Down. Jason, right? He was great. Great dude.
Yeah.
Always supportive. Thrash Grass. Yeah. Native Howl. I think they're going out with Guar. Ken, did you ever have a band where you guys were like wearing masks or something? Or were...
The story is, okay. So like my friends and I, when we were like, maybe, I don't know, 18, like right when I was in 0.04 with Buzz. Right. And like, I was kind of disbanding with that and, deciding like, I want to start Unearth with the guys in 0.04. And we didn't have Trevor at the time. We just decided to like wear scream masks and like, we thought it'd be funny to like run through the audience and stab people with knives that retract, you know what I mean? While we're playing. And, it was just fun. It was like a fun project. So I just got like, you know, literally the band had like 10 people in it and we were just being stupid, but yeah, it was like literally two shows.
You know how you were saying that you write pop songs and stuff?
Yeah.
When, I think it was A Day to Remember, it was somebody came out with a song and they had the guy with the marshmallow on the head. And I was like, nobody knows that, but that's Ken Susie. He's a millionaire. He's a fucking million. And they're like, what? What? And I had one of our dudes like going for like an hour. I'm like, yeah, no, he seriously, like Ken's got hits. Like people don't know. Like, you know how Skrillex dude was in played the festival with us with 18 Visions. What was his fucking band?
Right. Oh, First to Last. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They played in Italy with us with 18 Visions and Hatebreed. I remember watching them.
Yeah.
And they were like screamo. They were kind of like, I don't know, maybe were they kind of like Under Oath?
Oh, they were great. They were great.
In that genre for sure. Yeah.
Tim probably knows too. They were such great people. That band, we Unearthed, like actually like followed them. Like we would play, oddly enough, at the same time, we're both playing really small clubs and like we would always like bounce around and tours would follow. And we became very close with those guys. I remember Sonny was telling me when he was like, I think he was like 16 years old or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I just quit high school to do this full time. It's like crazy. I tried to talk him out of it. I was like, that's so stupid. You're going to be rich.
And he didn't even have to put a bear head or a marshmallow or anything on. He just could be him and do it.
He did one side of his hair. That's it.
And yeah. He blew his voice out and they kicked him out of the band and then he became
Man. And he's like, fuck you. I'll get a lesbian haircut and fucking be more paid than all of you fools. Right. Like he just like, he just went for it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's funny.
But you know what? Like you said, fuck the money. Cause you could have all that and still be miserable.
Yeah. You can make more money, like, you know, doing other shit like than music. Sorry.
That's one thing Ken and I have in common is I can truly say, because I had to learn to invest smart after everything I went through, and just I never knew if I'd have a chance to play music again, right? So I had to figure out how to financially survive without it. And Ken can financially survive just fine without it as well. So when we talk about ideas and what we want to do, like, money is just not part of the equation for us. You know, I mean, it's nice to make it, of course, but you know, we have very comfortable lives without all that. So it just gets to be like what we're passionate about, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can keep it kind of more pure in a sense.
Yeah. And I was going to say, Jamie, you seem to be like on the educational side of things, because I know your fan base is, you know, I'm currently sitting like at Fishman headquarters, right? And like, I have another gig outside of the band, and it's not because I needed this gig. I actually just really got along with Larry Fishman, and we luckily have a great like relationship and stuff. But like, there's so many times where everyone who's a musician, you know, they're in high school and you're 16 or 17 years old, and this is what I'm going to say about the music business. You know, you think you're going to be the Tom Brady of guitar, or you're going to be like, you know, you're going to be Kerry King or some, you know, Steve Vai. Like, the thing is that it's slim to none chance that you will become that. So when you decide to pick a school, don't pick Berkeley, don't pick the conservatory, don't pick MIT, GIT, or whatever it is, like any of these music schools. Go to school for something that matters, that you can apply later in life, because I hate to say it, if you do music every day, you will be a master at your craft. And like, unfortunately, some of the greatest musicians play in subways, right? So I'll say that my rant is, we'll close with, have a skill that when you do make it famous in a band, you know how to manage books, you know how to not get screwed by lawyers or managers and stuff like that. That is more important than like literally going to school for music when you just have that God-given ability.
That's great advice. And I'll tell you one thing. I think if you could learn how to be a spreadsheet wizard, like just numbers, Excel, whatever it is, you would put yourself above, I would say, 90% of the workforce out there. Just being a wizard at a spreadsheet, you could probably get into one of the highest, like I knew, think about the Hatebreed staff alone who have gone to being in the biggest positions in their fields, right? So we have a tour manager who's managing Blink. We have a merch guy who did merch for Kiss. I mean, there's literally nothing bigger beyond that. Like, is there anything bigger than Blink right now? I think just Taylor Swift is the only, like, did Taylor Swift even sell out Perth Stadium? I think Blink did in advance. So, and Perth is a small market. That's, so when you're doing that type of numbers, it just goes to show, if you can literally come from nothing. Like we've never had someone that came from the industry work for us. It was always from the ground up. But yeah, spreadsheet alone, you go into some tour and you see some fucking dude sitting there with an abacus trying to fucking count merch, you come in with a spreadsheet, you're hired.
Yeah. I went to school. I you know, I was a decent guitar player in college. The band was starting to happen, but I went to school for a bit, marketing and finance, with a business degree. And, I somehow figured out that I was way in advanced statistics in college, you know? So like, I had like three real solid places that I could go get a job after. I mean, the Mass Department of Revenue hired me to be a tax examiner right out of school. And then I just quit for the band, you know.
But Fishman, I think, you know, your longevity with Fishman is because the product is legit, right? Like you're not going to create those relationships and have people change from the pickups that they've used in the past because they're not legit. You also have to have the product match your skill or be better than or commercially competitive with other stuff that's out there.
I could talk about this all day, but literally what it comes down to is that Larry Fishman is a opinion leader. He is a blessed godfather, if you want to call it in mafia terms. Like he's the man, right? So when I met him and I tried the product that he currently had, I knew that no relationship that I had could sway people into playing Fluence pickups. But what I will say is that when I met him and I tried it out for myself, I literally called him the next day and said, I need to be a part of history. This is so important to me that I want to be a part of history, and you do not need to pay me. And literally, like, he wanted to hire me to be like a AR slash like brand manager, product manager. And we argued for like 2 days on whether or not, like, how much he should pay me, because I didn't want anything. I just wanted to be a part of history and help him in his cause. And luckily we're very successful at this point, but that's just the kind of guy he is. And that's the kind of guy I am. And sometimes just like a band, chemistry matters. When you have good chemistry and the vibe's cool, things become real good.
Yeah. And you want to put people around you that believe in it. And that, yep. you know, yep. will feel to have some skin in the game and want right. to get behind you. So, Tim, before we go, let's just go to the chat one more time. Chris Shea, Tim, do you remember playing the Rave in Milwaukee with Sworn Enemy? That was the last time Sworn Enemy was allowed at the Rave because security guards were on a power trip.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that I actually had to hold Lorenzo back from, like, just beating the security guard's head in because, you know, Lorenzo can be a scary dude if he wants to be, you know? And so... Yeah, I mean, I don't remember what the original beef was over, but the, you know,
he was trying to bring some broads back, and this guy is trying to cock block. It wouldn't be.
Yeah, yeah, and I actually never even got to the bottom of like whose fault anything was. I just was like, you know, probably a misconception about me is that I'm like, you know, a wild, crazy dude. I actually was like this level-headed guy trying to like, you know, steer Lorenzo into going back to his van or bus or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah. Not get into an altercation that's going to put him in jail for the night and miss the next show. Yeah. We've all had to do that a couple of times.
I believe the correct term is you kept him from punching someone's face out.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
According to lyrics.
Yes.
Well, exactly. What you didn't realize is that the security guard had his girlfriend with him, and Lorenzo went up to his girlfriend and said, "Hey, let me sniff your broccoli.
Let me touch your meat. Come on.
Let me show you my meat."
He's an incredible just transformation in terms of just changing life direction and all that. I still talk to Lorenzo, like, you know, relatively, I mean, I wouldn't say often, but just regular at least. And he wrote a couple of songs with me on the last, or at least he wrote one song and then did vocals on two on the previous Austrian Death Machine record, and I was telling him I want to do another song with him, but it's just, you know, with all the acting stuff he's got going on, we just got to link up.
Yeah, shout out to Lorenzo. I missed him at the 30th anniversary show. I really thought he was going to fly out and get up there with Sworn Enemy. It would have been awesome, but we can do it again. We'll see. The invite's there. I talked to Sal afterwards. I said, "Yo, get Larry out here. Call Larry." All right, so there you go, everybody. And you guys can come back on when you figure out the album situation, street date or whatever. We'll go from there, but good luck on the tour. Austrian Death Machine album's out now. You can go sign up for the Napalm. I subscribe to the Napalm YouTube page, and I see it's coming up in the algorithm now. So you're beating the algorithm gods, which is good because that shit's hard to even get suggested. So shout out to Napalm. They're doing something right.
Yeah. And then one last formal, like, apologies to address regarding the Austrian Death Machine record. It's not my fault, but there was a problem with the manufacturing of the vinyl, sending it out. They were a little bit delayed, which is not a huge deal, but then FedEx lost a bunch of my stuff in Europe for a minute. By the time I got it, everybody was late getting their vinyl, so I hand-numbered and hand-signed them all, which then turned into its own nightmare because I had to open up every package.
Right.
Like, they were all shrink-wrapped and then do it. And then some of those got damaged in shipping because the post office, you know, and since they're limited, then it's like, okay, I don't necessarily have a replacement for that. So it was a little bit of a nightmare getting those vinyls. But in the end, I think everybody was stoked that I put in the extra effort to try to do the hand number, hand sign thing. And for anybody who's wondering what's going on out there, there's still a few people out there. Their vinyls are just who knows where. They're just, you know, stuck in Europe somewhere. But I'm working on them. I promise I didn't forget.
Now you know why people don't want to put the records out themselves. It's because of shit like this, right?
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it was nobody's fault. I mean, I guess maybe FedEx to some degree, or maybe the pressing plant a little bit, but it wasn't my fault. It wasn't Napalm's fault, but man, we still had to work our butts off to fix the problems.
Oh, we get full, like my stepbrother will show me, or Baudette, he'll show me like notes in the thing, and the order will, the guy will be like, "Listen, take it out, put it," they have actual packing instructions when they order vinyl outside of the sleeve, insert outside of the cover, like, so God bless, for real. You got to pack it like with five boxes. This is what I imagine. This is literally what UPS and FedEx do when they get your record. They go, "Oh shit, look, someone's ordering a new record." They're like, "Oh yeah, here you go." That's what they do with it. They literally, like, I just picture them playing soccer with the vinyl when the box comes in, because they're haters. Okay. We got one at the post office right now. This guy is a fucking hater. We come in with 1,000 packages. God forbid we give you job security, you fucking bum. He's like gonna cry and stab me. Like, he's literally gonna go postal because we got orders coming in. All right. Sorry.
Well, I'm glad you can relate. And yeah, I mean, I put that Fragile sticker on there, but I don't even know if that matters. You know?
Oh, you put the Fragile sticker on? They're like, Fragile, you want to fuck? That's what they're doing.
Exactly. So this is sort of my like way of anybody who hears this that was part of that whole thing. I've really, truly done my best, and I will continue to do my best. Some people are still waiting, and I feel terrible about that. The record's been out not quite a month, but you know, they'll get the record almost a month later, and that's very unfair to them. But I really appreciate the support and do anything I can to make up for it.
Right on. And where can they order it?
I actually just have AustrianDeathMachine.com, and Napalm has their version of the vinyl as well. So those are the easiest places.
And Ryan Levson, shout out to Ryan, executive producer of The Josta Show, says, as a mailman, I promise to never damage your records. Thank you, Ryan. You're one of the good ones.
There are good ones out there. I don't
know. There are. There really are. I say let's go all the way back to the post office. Even though I got one hater over here, I say let's go back. Let's go back to cash in the mail, postal money orders. That was the best way. It's we got indoctrinated into this. Oh, you need to be on fucking whatever so you can get into Best Buy and Walmart. We got scammed. That was never a good thing. Yeah, let's fucking sell our record as a loss leader for $6.99 where you don't get a royalty because you didn't read the fucking co-op advertising clause in your contract. Yeah, that's a great idea. Oh, you sold 100,000 records. Yeah, but you sold them for $6.99 instead of $13.99.
You got scammed.
Yep. All right, guys.
You mentioned this a few times just before we go. I just wanted to say, like, being from the Northeast, I just wanted to say congratulations on 30 years. Like, honestly, Creed growing up was one of my favorite bands. And it was always a goal to play with you guys live when I was in Unearthed. And luckily, we got to spend many years together on the road. I just wanted to say, like, between you and the rest of the guys, like, congratulations. Like, it's such a huge deal. And I wish I could have been at the show, but I love you guys. You guys are great.
Oh, thank you so much, Ken. I always say you're one of the best dudes that we ever toured with. We lived the lives of 10 men in like one tour. Like, there was one tour where I finished the tour and I was like, I could literally die and right now and everything would be totally fine. And it is what it is. And there's a lot of shit we can't say on the podcast. I would, because I don't give a fuck, but there's a lot of shit we can't say on the podcast. But I just got to say, I'll always be grateful for that Ken energy, because you could go through the worst shit on the road and Ken will try to make it at least funny or fun or get a fun story out of it, it's a real quality when you've done 300 shows in a year and you're like, I can't even think about doing another show. Then you see Ken front row with like two hot babies. He's like throwing them on stage. Like, let's party. Like, you're like, this guy is a maniac. He's a legend.
You always had the bankroll. So I'd be like, yo, Jamie, I need like lights backstage and I'm going to bring back 50 girls. Is that cool? Can we just party with them? And you're like, yeah, dude, I'll throw money at that. That's cool.
Let's cater it.
Yeah, let's cater it.
Let's get some smoke machines.
my favorite thing of all time was that, like, I was wrangling for you guys and we're just having a great time. And like, it was always a party, but there was one festival, you played this enormous concert and I was like, I 60,000 people, whatever. And I was all the way in the back and all I hear is, where's the Wrangler? I just turn around and it took me like, it was like a mile to get to the stage. I'm like, what?
So great. So great. Thank you, Ken. And thanks, yeah. Tim. And and good luck with the record and good luck with the tours. And yeah, well, once you figure out the label and the street date, we'll have you guys back on. And yeah, and I will take you up probably on that that Burn Your Wishes license. I'm not asking to own the copyright. I'm not asking to own the masters for everybody out there who's gonna. Whatever.
It's yours. Anything I do, it's yours. You want a breakdown right now? I'll send it to you on text.
Send me the alarm clock riff right out of the gate.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody from Patreon. We'll be back on, I think we're going to come back Monday with Daughtry. If we got any Daughtry, you like Daughtry? What's the guy's first name, though? Does anyone know?
Rex.
Rex Daughtry. You know Daughtry? I'm his brother, Rex. Thank you for listening. If you're still watching, listening, like, subscribe, hit the bell, give a review. Let me know what you thought of the episode. And I appreciate everybody who's subscribed over on youtube.com/The Josta Show. Or if you're in the YouTube app,
leave a comment or hit us up, joshtheshow@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought of the episode. We got Danny Diablo coming up soon. We got Steve Vai on episode 700. We got Marty Friedman coming on. We got Chris Daughtry coming on. We got a great month for the rest of April. And then, of course, in May, we got Milwaukee Metal Fest. So get your tickets now. Go to therave.com/metalfest and support the sponsors of the podcast and the festival. Support centurymedia.store. You'll see they have a ton of great releases, and we're so excited to have their bands like Night Demon and Bewitcher and Skeletal Remains and so many others on the fest. Go to centurymedia.store. No coupon code needed because all the stuff is priced to move, Buster. Also, thank you to Dunable Guitars. And right now you can save 10% when you go to dunableguitars.com. Use the code MMF24. They're another presenter of the Milwaukee Metal Fest and a great sponsor of the Joss's Show. Big thanks to Sasha and EJ and the whole crew over there at Dunable Guitars. Use that code. Get yourself an awesome axe. Check it out. MMF24 saves you 10% off. Link will be in the show notes. Of course, indiemerchstore.com. The greatest, one of our longest sponsors, and they were with us 2023 at Milwaukee Metal Fest. They had a huge booth, and they'll have it again, and they're presenting the main stage up in the Eagles. So check out IndieMerchStore.com. Use the promo code JOSTA10. Get yourself some Vitriol gear, Cattle Decap, Carnifex. They got a ton of great stuff. Everybody from the Chaos and Carnage Tour has merch well-stocked over at IndieMerchStore.com. And when you go to the pre-orders page, you'll see they have like Peeling Flesh, Extortionist, Party, what is this? Party Cannon, Doth, Ulcerate, and a bunch of others. IndieMerchStore.com, use the promo code JOSTA10. Of course, Patreon.com/JOSTA. Or if you want to donate to the show, you could do $ Jamie Josta at Cash App. Any amount gets you a shout out on the show. Or Jamie Josta on Venmo, or paypal.me/Josta. If you want to plug your band, plug your show, plug your podcast, any donation gets you a shout out on an upcoming episode. All right. Martyrstore.net, use the code 15JJ, martyrstore.net. And I will see you guys Thursday, May 16th at the Rave for the Josta pre-party. And then, of course, Saturday, May 18th, Hatebreed is going to be at Milwaukee Metal Fest. And then two Josta for All CD release shows, May 31st in PA at Mickey's Black Box, and then June 1st in good old Jersey, baby. June 1st with Overkill at the Starland Ballroom. I will put up the meet and greets, and you can get your tickets at starlandballroom.com, but I will put up the meet and greets at martyrstore.net by the time you're hearing this or watching it. All right, drink your coffee, do your push-ups, listen to fucking Ulcerate, and I will be back with Danny Diablo, Steve Vai, Marty Friedman, so many others, Chris Daughtry. We got a bunch in the can. All right. Love you all. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Executive producers Jake Olszewski, Ben Lee, AJ Lewis, Garrett Keeping, Dan Smith, Nick Torito, JJ Hernandez, Joe Bartovic, Jason Jarvis, Chris Larice, Alex Smolin, Todd McKee, John Blewett, Richard Miller, Kyle Marg, Nate Leffingwell, Morgan Costner, Mark Tagg, Zapagor Waikato, Niall Scholard, Kathy D'Ambrosio, Justin Steven, Jack Flanders, the Pit Commander, Andy Wilson, Jeffrey Kuhn, Kimo Humalamaki, Jonathan Metis, Brandon Cooper, Matthew Jankowskis, Jamie Kutcher, Ryan Underkoffler, Matt West, Ryan Maurice, Chad Green, Dallas Hendricks, Jacob Ahrensberg, Kenneth Moore, Kona Butterflies, Stephen Helm, Richard McIntosh, Jeff Stevenson, Ryan Williams, Larry Tooley, Dallas Bolin, Ryan St, Nathan Rex Madrid, Cameron Hendricks, Scandalous Official, Joe Motson, Let's Talk Resident Evil, Andrew Chase, Guy on the Couch, Chris Winchester, Antonio Reyes, Joe Otson, Dustin Stone, Lee Walker, Ryan Levson, John Henkes, Robert Bushaw, Troy Seal, Mark Horror Armenta, Jay Liberston, Nick Fowler, Mike Horgan, Emma Horgan, Arnorock, Patrick King, Oscar Brumman, Stacy Steineke, Fernando Somoza, Patrick O'Brien, Dominique Zimmer, Ryan Sanders, Lara Snyder, Daniel Berg, Milwaukee Metal Sausage, Adam Boss, Adam Mecklenburg.
Everybody, this is Christina.
And I'm Andrea from Acura Coil.
And we're here to let you know that we will be playing at the Milwaukee Metal Fest on May 19th, 2024 at the Rave Eagles Club.
So visit therave.com to get your tickets and go on milwaukeemetalfest.com for more information.
See you there.